tonight.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I am Nabil Biagio sitting in for John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Thursday, July 27, 2023. Sudan's army delegation returns from peace talks in Jeddah as fighting with rival paramilitary rapid support forces rocks the capital Khartoum.
Each side of the conflict in Sudan insists of a clear victory. So I think it my estimation that we are facing a worst case scenario, that is, we call it a negative zero-sum game.
And humanitarian organizations in South Sudan appeal for funding to transport people fleeing fighting in neighboring Sudan. We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Witnesses said rockets pummeled the Sudanese capital today as paramilitaries attacked a key air force base north of the capital, claiming they killed and wounded dozens of soldiers. The violence coincides with the return to Khartoum today of a Sudanese army delegation from talks in the Saudi Red Sea port of Jeddah aimed at restoring peace in Sudan. The army says differences on issues, including the rebels evacuating civilian homes in the capital and public facilities, hospitals and roads, led to a lack of agreement. Witnesses told the French news agency AFP today that there was heavy artillery shelling in the capital's northeast, or rather northwest, while drones belonging to the paramilitary rapid support forces attacked the air base north of Khartoum. Since April 15, Sudanese Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan has been locked in a conflict with his former deputy RSF commander Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. The fighting, concentrated in Khartoum and the western region of Darfur, has killed more than 3,900 people and displaced more than 3.3 million. I interviewed Sudanese professor of political science at Cairo University, Hamdi Hassan, who highlights the failure of regional and international initiatives to restore peace in Sudan so far. He also warns of a prolonged conflict in the embattled northeast African country.
These different initiatives prove that each side of the conflict in Sudan insists of a clear victory. So I think it, my estimation that we are facing a worst case scenario, that is, we call it a negative zero-sum game, where you cannot find anyone could be a clear winner. All of them will be a loser. So in spite of the army has an upper hand with the Air Force, but he cannot use it in an urban kind of warfare, while the RSF, the rapid force, well trained long time ago in the city kind of warfare because of their long experience in Darfur since 2003. So they know exactly how to use the people as their own incubator in their homes and using their vehicles. So you cannot use your deadly force by the military against them. So this will be a long kind of warfare, and the only losers are the people of Sudan. And you can see the suffering of the people who move from the city Khartoum to neighboring provinces in Sudan, or they are fleeing to the neighboring countries like Ethiopia, Chad, and Egypt. This is the dilemma of Sudan right now. So you have
Yes, you seem to be saying almost like there's nothing the mediators can do, but surely we have the region, like you mentioned, we have influential actors like Saudi Arabia, like the Emirates, we have the United States, we have the IGAD. Surely there's something can be done to break this deadlock and broker peace.
Let me assure you that the United States not, doing enough. So the sanction is not enough. I think everybody is busy now in the war in Ukraine. There is no much pressure from the United States and the European Union, and also from the regional actors. When it comes to the regional actors, you have different interests, sometimes conflict interests, so that is hinder any unified attempt to bring both parties in the table. Another factor that there is a deep kind of conflict, the root, we have to look at the root causes, where you have the rule of the center, what we call it, the Neolithic elite, who dominated the post-colonial state in Sudan until now. Nobody being a president of Sudan from outside this Neolithic people. Now Hamidetti considers himself the liberator who will represent the marginalized people in the periphery, whether in East Sudan or the South or these peripheral provinces in Sudan. So it is more than a kind of clash between two generals. It has these rooted causes that led to a kind of, sometimes would be ethnic, racial conflict between the Arabs, non-Arabs. You have also military forces represented ethnic groups. So there's a fear that the war between the Sudanese army and the RSF to be extended to include different armed groups in Sudan, which is already existed.
That's Hamdi Hassan, professor of political science at Cairo University. He spoke with me from the United Arab Emirates this past hour. Aid officials in South Sudan are calling for urgent funding to support the onward transportation of people fleeing conflict in Sudan from border areas. The acting UN humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan says, while South Sudan continues to receive thousands of refugees and returnees, funding has dwindled and that in 2 weeks' time, the humanitarian community will not be able to transport people to their final destinations. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in South Sudan, or UN OCHA, says there is a critical funding gap for onward transportation for people fleeing Sudan's conflict. Peter van der Auret, acting UN Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan, says aid agencies may be forced to halt transportation in 2 weeks if urgent funding is not secured.
So the only actors that are currently providing support for transportation are UN agencies. And the funding of the UN agencies will cease or will be used completely in 2 weeks' time. So if the national government doesn't restart its transportation and the international organizations do not get additional funding, essentially when people are arriving at the border, unless they have money themselves, they will get stuck there.
Aurel says $26.4 million is needed in order to continue with transporting refugees and returnees to their final destinations to avert further crisis.
If we assume that between now and the end of the year we'll see a similar number of arrivals from Sudan as we have seen so far, which of course is only a working hypothesis, it depends on what will happen in Sudan, we need a little bit over $26 million to transport the people that we believe will be in need of transport support to their areas of destination. So between now and the end of the year, we need $26 million. And as I mentioned, we need it fast because currently the funding is running out in 2 weeks' time.
Aurel says as of June, the number of new arrivals significantly surged, with approximately 15,000 individuals arriving from Sudan every week, and that more than 70% of the arrivals enter South Sudan through rank, a majority of them being South Sudanese returnees. The UN Refugee Agency, or UNHCR, said last week more than 190,000 people have crossed into South Sudan since the start of the conflict in mid-April. Aurel says not securing the funding could negatively impact the well-being and safety of returnees and refugees from Sudan and the host communities at the border areas.
That means that the humanitarian services in the border areas that are already stretched today will become totally overwhelmed. So people will not have access to the most basic of services. And it will be impossible for the humanitarians to scale up to deal with such a large number of people, simply because also for that there are not sufficient funds. And the context in Renki is such that it's very difficult to provide humanitarian assistance to so many people. So that means that there will be a lot of suffering. It also means most likely that there will be tensions in places like Renki, because people will be, people get very nervous when they arrive and they cannot move to where they want to go. There will be competition over the limited services that are available. There might be fights over food. So we will see an environment that also from a security perspective will create a lot of issues, not just for the returnees and the refugees, but also, of course, for the people living in Renki.
The UN estimates the number of refugees and returnees arriving to South Sudan could hit 500,000 in the next 4 months, and that without enough funding, it could lead to a humanitarian crisis as prices of food and essential commodities continue to rise. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Aid organizations are telling South Sudan's leaders that the best way to address food insecurity is to restore peace and stability in the country. The organizations say more than 7.7 million people, including more than 3 million children in South Sudan, are in need of food aid and livelihood support. The interim head of the European Commission Humanitarian Aid in South Sudan says food insecurity and instability are connected, as we hear from Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
International humanitarian groups appealed to South Sudanese leaders to find a way to restore peace at a forum that brought together 8 agencies, development agencies, and donors to talk about the effects of food insecurity on South Sudanese children. The organizations say 40% population of the country's children need food assistance and livelihood support, and that most children are vulnerable, so families adopt negative coping mechanisms to deal with their problems. Francisco Njage Kaburu, coordinator for child protection at the children's agency UNICEF in South Sudan, says growing food insecurity is threatening 3.1 million children in the country.
The situation of food insecurity for children has worsened because of the combination of a conflict, a climate-related crisis, and so on and so forth. So what we have to do is integrate our approaches to make sure whenever we are supporting responses to food insecurity crisis affecting children, we also guarantee that we provide services.
The agencies say negative coping mechanisms children have been forced to adopt include child marriage, hazardous child labor, family separation, and recruitment by armed forces and armed groups. Laura Hastings, acting interim head of the European Commission Humanitarian Aid in South Sudan, says the biggest challenge to addressing the food insecurity situation is insecurity.
We need the safety and security. We need the government leadership to be able to support that we have a conducive environment. Because once we know that there is a safe space for people to reside in their own places, that they stop being displaced, then we have the potential for development.
Jacob Moga, Director General in the National Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security, agrees that conflicts in recent years have contributed greatly to food insecurity in South Sudan.
The insecurity in the first place causes displacement. So people in the productive areas could be displaced, and so whatever was supposed to have been harvested left and got spoiled. Instability also affects accessibility of whatever little food that has been produced, if there was any surplus, to be brought into the market.
Moga says his ministry does not get nearly enough funding from the government, despite it being an important institution in the fight against hunger in the country. He says last year the government allocated only around 2% of the national budget to the Ministry of Agriculture and Food Security, a practice that fails to follow the Maputo Protocol, which demands 10% government budget allocation to the Ministry of Agriculture.
We need security in place because that is one main element to enabling people to get down and think freshly and get engaged in production and in any other productive activity.
The agencies say conflict, economic challenges, climate-induced shocks, displacement, and particularly food insecurity increase the risk and vulnerability for sexual and gender-based violence, child marriage, abductions, and mental health issues among children. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, residents and leaders in South Sudan's Unity State discuss federalism. Stay tuned for that story after this break.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Some residents and leaders in the Unity State capital, Bantiu, have expressed support for a federal system of government. In remarks during a two-day consultative meeting on the topic, the deputy governor said federalism would improve service delivery across the country. Lieth Nyagjok reports for VOA from Bantiu.
The 2018 peace agreement required the national government to adopt a federal system of governance through a new permanent constitution during the transitional period. The proposal including making the federalism part of the permanent constitution, but there's still no agreement on how to define the federalism as a part of the governance in South Sudan. To educate the citizens on the meaning of federalism and collect their views on the matters, Federal Affairs Minister Lesubo Loduro Wango organized a two-day dialogue in Bantiu this week. Paigiar County resident Michael Reko say federalism has its advantage because it promotes democracy and freedom of expression.
My understanding of federalism is good. The reason why it is good that people will govern themselves freely, freedom of expression is the only thing I see.
Another participant who prepared to be identified only as Nyankuma for the fear of refusal from the government say federalism is a popular demand in South Sudan.
In our discussion, we understand the federal system is good. It will have no division. It will not bring division among the citizens. People will unite for peace, and we will unite as South Sudanese. We will stand together, and we will be able to elect our leaders well in the future.
The acting head of the United States Civil Society Network, Ria Kong, say federalism is the only system of the governance that ensure good governance, accountability, and services delivery to the community.
I think it will be one of the systems that will address this kind of communal conflict within the country, one of the systems that will also address the economical crisis, also one of the things that will reduce misuse of the resources by few individuals, but it will help strengthen the accountability and respect to the right of the community.
Federal Affairs Minister Lesubo Loduro Wango say it is important to get the feedback from the public on including federalism in South Sudan permanent constitution.
The federal system of government is one of the solutions to address the governance problem in the Republic of South Sudan. So the governance problem that needs to be addressed is agreed in the peace agreement, in the revitalized peace agreement, that we need to establish a federal system of government, which is a popular demand of the people of South Sudan. So having that structure, that mandate from the agreement, it means that the Minister of Federal Affairs is given a specific timeline. That is its establishment, and then the mandate that it's to work within its framework.
Deputy Unity State Governor To Tungwar Kwegong say there are several reasons why people want a federal system of government.
Federalism has become so popular that every citizen in South Sudan is demanding this federal system to be, you know, implemented, to at least to be the mode of practice. And above all, it is the only ways in which services, you know, decision-making process would reach our grassroots. And that is why it is important.
State official and members of the group representing people with disability, women, youth, civil society, and business organization attend the consultative meeting. For BA News, I'm Lee Nyajwa in Bentiu.
From Bentiu, we go back to Juba, where several young Sudanese refugees sheltering at the Gorom refugee camp outside Juba say they worry about their future after the deadly fighting in Sudan forced them to quit their studies. One student says he had high hopes of starting a successful career after graduating, but the conflict has shattered his dreams. David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
23-year-old Usul Aldin was a university student in Darfur before fighting between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces disrupted his studies. He says he wanted to become an engineer after school, but says that dream slipped away on April 15th, and all he can focus on now is survival.
My dream was to help myself, my family, and even help my country. But now this war has sent us away and scattered us. Right now, I don't even know the whereabouts of some of my family members. A bomb hit our house and got my brother wounded. It has been a month since I came here. If there are services, I am happy to continue my education.
19-year-old Mohammed Hamid, another refugee at the Gorom refugee camp, says he was in Senior 2 when the war erupted. He says he had to abandon all his books when he fled the country.
My dream has been interrupted, and I see a lot of things here that are not going right. And I feel like there is nothing there for me in the future. Amid this war and a gunfire at that time, I took nothing with me for my school, even clothes. But God willing, one day I will return to school.
24-year-old Mohammed Mohamud says going to school and studying in the Gorom camp would help refugees like him focus their mind on something useful and also help them to recover from the painful memories of war.
My education is now stuck since this war started. We don't know how to study and continue our education. Our hope as young people here is to continue with our education by all means possible. We all know that through education, we can be able to change our lives.
The non-profit organization Across is partnering with the United Nations Refugee Agency to provide humanitarian support to Sudanese at the Gorom refugee settlement. Levi Moga, program manager for Across, says UNHCR is working to expand classes at the only school available at the camp to accommodate the many children of Sudanese refugees.
We are adding additional classrooms and teachers are being recruited. So those who are school-age going children in the primary and ECD will be absorbed in the school here in Gorom. Secondary and university CRA has already requested them to be profiled and then will be shared with the Minister of Education whether they can be supported at the national education system.
The United Nations Children Agency, UNICEF, says the war has displaced at least 450,000 Sudanese children from their homes, with tens of thousands fleeing to neighboring countries. The agency says those children are being deprived of education and are at higher risk of exploitation and child marriage than children not displaced by conflict. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
Forensic Financial forensic experts say almost 100,000 people in countries across southern Africa have lost huge amounts of money in a social media-based financial scam. South Africa's Financial Sector Conduct Authorities, or FSCA, says some victims have lost their entire life savings. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
The FSCA says Cape Town-based couple Darren and Shirley Langbein set up a company called United African Stokvel in 2020. In southern Africa, stokvels are community-based savings schemes that are strictly controlled. The Langbeins operated via Facebook, offering people opportunities to invest in property and telecommunications. According to the FSCA, the Langbeins hooked victims by using fraudulent documents as proof that their clients had tripled and even quadrupled investments within 6 to 12 months. Chairman of the National Stokvel Association of South Africa, Andrew Lukele, says the fraud began as soon as the Langbeins used the word stokvel to describe their business.
A stokvel ordinarily would be formed by people who come from the same neighborhood, people who know each other very well. The basic tenet of a stokvel would be peer pressure and trust. So in the absence of those basic tenets, it is easy for anyone to use social media and as faceless people to they would be investors into believing that they can deliver better returns in the shortest space of time, which is impossible.
Lured by promises of big profits, people poured money into the Langbeins' bank accounts. Most received either minimal returns or nothing at all. Calls to Darren Langbein's cell phone went unanswered, but in a recording posted on his company's Facebook page in 2021, he explained that his business offered clients what he termed highly secure savings plans.
A member would contact us and say, I would like to join this plan. Then what we would do, we phone them up, we record a telephone conversation for their protection and ours. We have some very sophisticated systems here which confirm a member's name to their ID, to their bank account, to their cell phone, to their email. And then the member would save that certain amount into a certain account in our stokvel. That account is individually audited each year because it will show then member putting in so much money and then the member being paid out from that account. So that's very important from tracking perspective.
Langbein described United African Stokvel as a company at the forefront of Africa's digital finance revolution.
We don't deal in cash. You can deposit cash into the stokvel through an ATM, but there's always a digital trail of money coming in to money going out. I want to have nothing to do with cash. I don't like it. A digital stokvel is very efficient. Contact us, we'll sign you up, we'll get going immediately. Also, from a company's perspective, we're very light at the top. We have a growing base of members, but there's only a handful of people that are needed to run the company because we're so efficient. And that makes it very healthy in terms of a cost perspective. You need money to make money, so there's more money available to make more money.
But, says the FSCA, the only people making money were the Langbeins. It says its investigation is ongoing, but it cannot promise victims they'll get their money back. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
VOA's English to Africa service celebrates its 60th anniversary on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts on our programs. Send a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. Tell us what your favorite program is, or let us know about a particular news story that you connected with. Recall a favorite memory about VOA Africa, and tell us what stories you think we should cover or how we can improve. That number again is +1 202 258 3076. And thanks for 60 years of support. And that's all we have for you this Thursday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. And we've been listening to Ras Corby and the song Fi Sabab. I am your host, Nabil Biagio in Washington. Thanks for taking the time to be with us. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.